And welcome into another edition of Falcon Cast. We are set to smash this coverage today, I can tell you that much. We always end the show with some of these crazy pictures and poses and whatnot. Today it's suns out, guns out.
It is gun show.
Shock did that on purpose. He wore the medium t-shirt. Kind of had the sleeves rolled up a little bit, showing the brand.
I wear what is given to me. Mm-hmm. This is just Falcon issue. So.
You guys did the whole flexing thing, and I sat here with basically an elbow in my mouth. Shock's just out here like.
We have a lot of fun on this program, and it's even more fun when you come back again, and we are 2-0.
Talk to me.
Hey, NFC East, you're not quite as tough as everybody thought you were. At least.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I'm calling them out.
Hot takes.
At like 10 o'clock in the morning.
The truth has to be told.
It has to be. You know what? Everybody said, oh, Philadelphia, they're going to take care of the Falcons. Didn't happen. Sorry, ESPN. Well, they go to New York. They're going to take care of the Falcons. Didn't happen. Sorry, New York. Sorry, ESPN. Sorry, all you guys that want to keep talking trash. Falcons come out 2-0. And we'll start the first question. Did the Falcons go win the game like we all think they did? Or did the Giants collapse like the national media has tried to spin it?
You know what I say? I think the Falcons went out and won the ball game. Obviously, some of the things they did caused the Giants to look like they gave it away. But you go back to a couple key plays in the game, and everybody's rolling this guy off. Croy Bierman, I mean, it's been documented. It's been talked about how well he played in the game. The two big plays, the sack fumble, and then the big stop on third and one or two it was. Those are plays that he went out and did. Those are plays that the Falcons went out and executed that forced the Giants into some bad situations. Yes, the Giants had their own mishaps. Falcons called timeout, and then they still get a delay of game, and then they come out the next play, almost get another delay of game. Yes, those are things that they did. But overall, when the Falcons were down 20-10, Giants were driving, had a chance to at least get three or possibly get seven. They get the sack fumble, and then things start rolling for the Falcons. So I think it was all about the Falcons finishing, never giving up, facing adversity the week before with Philly in that third quarter, and the Falcons had to, they had to bow up, and this was the same situation. They bowed up and said, all right, we're not just going to give you this game because you're up by 10 and you're at home. We're going to continue to fight you. And one thing Coach Quinn always stresses, and we hear it all the time, and I'm sure everybody else hears it, is we want to be a team that finishes. And this is a team in the second half that finishes. And over the past couple of years, we haven't seen this out of this ball club. And we've seen it in the first 2 weeks, this team finishing in the fourth quarter.
This is the thing that I think a lot of people forget about it. The game is how mental it is, right? Okay. You get into the fourth quarter, you're down by 10. It's so easy to go in the tank. It's week two. You know, you can afford the loss. You know, you just kind of like, all right, well, we didn't get this one. This one got away from us. Fine. We'll move on to the next one. But you preach that mentality of we don't win in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. We win in the fourth quarter, right? You don't give up. You keep going. I think that ends up sustaining you. You know, you go into that fourth quarter, you're dog tired.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you need something that's gonna lift you, something that's gonna keep you going. And these guys rallied around each other,
right,
and really picked each other up. I really think that, you know, obviously the strip sack there with Croy was huge. It got everything going. But there was a pretty big mountain to climb once that happened. And they came out and executed. So for me, it was way more about the Falcons won this game as opposed to the Giants collapse. I know it's been phrased as, well, the Giants blew another one. Well, you know, they came up against a pretty good fourth quarter team.
Yeah, and you got to add some other plays to that. How about Jacob Tammy? Right after you get the strip sack, you get a 40-some-odd-yard play out of him, which is huge because it gets you out of the shadow of the end zone. Julio's catch, which we'll talk about later, just flat-out ridiculous. Matt basically threw a ball that Julio, I think, was just trying to bat it away. Like I said, we'll mention that. And then Matt Ryan reading coverage. When you're down three, you know, you're in Matt Bryant field goal range. You could tie this game and go to overtime. But he sees the Giants come up in bump coverage, and you and I are standing right next to each other going, oh, they're in bump coverage.
Yeah.
And immediately Julio down the field, and Matt puts a ball on him on the money, perfectly placed, and you go in and you win. You know, they call the touchdown back, but then Devontae Freeman, talking about fighting, scratching, clawing for every inch to get into the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. It was great to see the Falcons overcome adversity. I think Wes had the stat, and I could be quoting this wrong, but it was the first time since the early 80s that the Falcons had overcome a 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter to win.
Wow.
Think about that for a second. It's been 30-some-odd years since that's happened. So the Falcons went out and won that. I don't want to hear the nonsense about the Giants collapsing.
And I was going to say, I'm like, you know, last year you don't win that game.
No.
2 years ago, you don't win that game, and even week one. But we're talking about you go back to the 80s, and right. we're not even winning that game, even as good as the Falcons have been during some of those years in that period. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's just no way to me – you know, look, things happen in a football game, but this was way more about the Falcons than it was the Giants.
And one last thing, you bring up a good point about Matt Fine and Julio over there on the one-on-one when they get bump coverage. And here's what defenses want to do. The Falcons, like you just mentioned, we're starting to get in Matt field goal range. Mm-hmm. And one thing defenses do is they bring pressure. Right. They want to bring pressure to knock you out of field goal range. And give credit to the offensive line. Give credit to Matt, like you just mentioned, understanding what teams are trying to do. And then you make them count. You know, you make them pay for trying to come after you and leaving one of the top receivers in the league one-on-one, and then you make the play when it's there. You don't say, okay, I know what they're trying to do, and let's take a shot, and, you know, you don't come down with it. You make the play, and it ends up going in your favor, and those are things that make a good team great.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you want. 2-0, there's such a fine line in this league between winning and losing. Doesn't matter how pretty it is. It doesn't have to be aesthetically pleasing. You just have to go out and get the job done, and they did that again in a tough environment in New York. And they're able to sit here at 2-0. Front seven also played well again. We've talked about Croy at length, and it's nice to talk about him on a positive side as opposed to what you hear in radio a lot of times, the negative light for Croy Bierman. He made a play. But there's a lot of guys up front that continue to make plays. Justin Durant, Paul Warlow. I got to give Paul Warlow a lot of props.
Playing with that, yeah.
That guy spent the entire second quarter, whether it was getting a hot massage from, you know, some of the team doctors trying to stretch. They put – yeah. I wanted the hot massage as well, but that had nothing to do with football.
I didn't get one. No,
I was like, my back hurts.
Because you didn't have the guns out. That's what's happening.
That was the problem. But, you know, he did everything he could to get back on the field. It looked – because this guy was struggling to walk up and down the sideline.
Right.
All of a sudden, they put a sleeve on him. They do a couple of things, and here comes Paul Warlow back out there, part of the front seven that's playing.
And you know what? I did a breakdown on the – Rooms to Go Armchair Quarterback, that happened.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, but I did a breakdown on one of the plays with Babineau. He did a good job. They try to run a stretch play to the right side. He's stretching it, keeping his left hand open, and he does a good job of actually forcing the football back inside, not losing his leverage, mm-hmm. and forcing the football back inside. And here comes Beasley from the back side. Here comes Durant scraping over the top at his linebacker position to get a big loss. Those type of plays, they don't get the credit for it, but that's part of the front seven guys doing their job, doing their individual work up front to make sure other guys can be in position to make plays. And you talk about that front seven, I think this is the second straight game that the Falcons allowed under 100 yards rushing. This is the type of defense that wins games for you. Over the past couple of years, your offense has really been keeping you in the game or winning games for you. Now this defense is winning games for you, and they're doing it, you know, late in the game.
You know, going back to the Warlow situation, you know, we were on Warlow watch, and we were watching him mm-hmm. trying to come back, desperately wanting to be back in that game. But I think one thing that stood out to me during that time period is Nate Stupar comes in, yep. Alan Bradford comes in, and there's no drop-off mm-hmm. at all. And that shows to me this is a great scheme for these guys. These guys are able to come in and be effective. It doesn't matter second string, third string. Right. They're coming in and they're being effective. I don't know that you see that in previous years where you lose a guy and maybe there's not a whole lot of drop-off. But Nate Stupar coming in, hitting people. Alan Bradford coming in and hitting people. I think that
– Stupar had seven tackles.
I mean, that is one of those things that really stands out about this defense and the way that Quinn has formed it, bringing the system and doing all those things. And he talks about how simple it is and all these other things. It's just – kind of go play football.
And one thing that I've heard a lot of the guys talk about on defense is Coach Quinn makes sure everybody on their defense knows exactly what everybody else is doing. So you know what his role is, and you know where he fits in his defense. So if another guy comes in and steps in, he knows exactly where he fits in that defense. He has to play another position. We know with the 53-man roster, you got to know multiple positions because you may have to play other positions because of your versatility. And bringing in different guys who can do that is just a plus for this team.
I saw a moment, and this is with the front seven near the end of the game. William Moore was gassed. He was out of the mm-hmm. game. Warlow was out of the game, and Justin Durant was all out. So you're talking about three starters in the fourth quarter that were out just gassed or dealing with injuries, and Durant was dealing with a foot scenario that was playing out throughout the game as well. Kamal Ishmael steps right in, no issues. You talked about Bradford. Bartu comes in the game, no issues.
Therese came in the game.
Robinson Therese comes in the game. I mean,
out of nowhere.
This is stuff that in the past, Jay and Shock, you wouldn't have seen. Think about the starters last year at linebacker. It was Bartu and it was Warlow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who are the backups after that? guys that aren't here anymore.
Right.
So, and I know Nate was on the team last year, but you see a better depth, a better understanding, and there's not that oh no moment when you see guys come in the game. And the front seven's been great because they can rotate eight or nine guys on the defensive line, and there's not a drop off. And how about Vic Beasley finally getting that first sack? Unfortunately for him, the ball bounces 10 yards down the field to a New York Giant, or he would have had the nice start.
Such a bad call, man. It should have been, you know, I mean, the Giants obviously got up there and ran the play, but he's been so close. You saw him in the Philly game be close. Kind of the same situation happened with Sam Bradford. In this game, he was close as well. It just makes you feel so good that you drafted a guy and you're seeing production out of him immediately. Mm-hmm. You're seeing what he could do in the run game. You see him in the pass game. You see him be a guy who's hungry. He's not playing like a rookie. He's, right. You know, he's stepping up to the plate and saying, this is what I do. I get after the quarterback, and he's doing that.
And he's doing a good job in the run game as well, yeah. Because what you're not hearing called is, oh, they're going at Vic Beasley because he can't set the edge. Mm-hmm. He's done a good job setting the edge. Now, the Falcons did have some injury concerns during the game. We mentioned Paul Warlow dealing with a calf issue, Justin Durant dealing with his. Julio, guys, there's no problem. Julio's going to play this week. He'll be fine. Tevin Coleman's not going to play, though. Not a good sign when you see a guy get hit, immediately head down, and they put him on a cart because he's in so much pain. He's dealing with a rib injury. They're now saying 2 to 4 weeks, not knowing how much pain he can deal. Surprisingly, I've broken a rib before.
I was going to ask if any of the three of us,
if any three of us had broken anything, it had to be.
It had to be.
It had to be John. And it's not the former football player. No, it's John Michaels. I have heard. I've never broken a rib, and I have heard that it is some of the worst pain. Like every breath,
yes,
is painful.
I broke my rib and broke three of them and had a 30% collapse of my lung when it happened.
Dude,
so I was in pain.
What were you doing?
Playing football.
I was going to ask. Yeah. Did we want to ask? What was
happening? I had to know three.
It's always football, man.
So what happens when you play full contact flag football?
With
you
no
hit
pads,
with no
right?
pads. Yeah, I hit a guy, I took him to the ground, and about a 330-pound guy fell on top of me, broke my ribs here. When you say this is the worst pain, I couldn't even lay on my bed because it was too soft.
Yeah,
I slept on the floor because it's hard. It keeps you stable. For those first week and a half, it hurts to sneeze. It hurts to cough. If you're having sinus problems. Everything's going to hurt, and it takes a while to get back.
And here's the thing you got to think about. Oh, yeah, you have those issues, which are huge, it hurts to cough, hurts to breathe, all that kind of stuff. Imagine getting the game. Yeah, they're going to pad him up. Yeah, they're going to, you know, make sure he feels good. But he has to clench. He has to move. He has to, you know, he's taking hits from the side. He's got people coming at him and hitting him from all different angles. And eventually that's going to wear off. I mean, there's only so much pad that you can put around you as a running back that makes you feel comfortable. He also has to tote the football, and he has these big pads out here that leaves room for the ball to be out and guys can hit it out. So it's partly pain, but it's also your comfort level. And when you're playing in a position like running back, which is very, very critical.
And it's not just the getting hit portion. You have to remember the ribs, anything you do, and I'm not moving very much because I'm not real flexible, but any turn, any movement, any side to side, it hurts.
Yeah.
And that's going to be – and it is going to be a pain threshold thing. And, I don't know what the legalities are in the NFL anymore. But that's where you take the numbing shot or whatever. And then after the game, you're going, somebody please get me ice.
Yeah. Right. And that this is my thing with this whole situation is you've got to feel pretty confident in his ability to return, if not this week, then the week after, because you're carrying two running backs right now, one of which is an undrafted free agent. So I think you feel pretty good about Tevin probably behind the scenes, but there is no doubt in my mind that he's dealing with some pretty painful stuff.
A lot of people ask me, why are they only carrying two running backs? And here's the best way I can think about this. The rules in the NFL are set up different. It's not like if a guy gets hurt, you just go, okay, we'll go sign somebody else. Mm-hmm. You'd actually have to make a roster move. Now, if you thought Tevin was going to be out 8-12 weeks, you do like the Cowboys did. You put him on injured reserve, designated to return. Then you can fill his roster spot. The problem is right now, if you want to add a running back, they have to cut somebody else somewhere else.
Yeah.
And obviously Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff and Scott Pioli really comfortable with what's on the roster. Because he's going to come back in 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 4, Falcons are basically going to have 52 on game day instead of 53.
Well, look at – I mean, the Cowboys are doing that with Dez Bryant. They didn't put him on injured reserve, so they're dealing with being down one player. I think what fans are concerned about is that, oh, my gosh, you look at the depth chart, you got two guys that are healthy right now. One of those guys goes down. Who's stepping in? Valid question, I think. You know, hopefully you don't find yourself in that situation where you've got to plug in like.
I think Devin Hester played some running back in college.
There's a lot of these guys that played back, running back.
Jay, I mean, you got the guns out. Tell them, hey, I can tote it.
Just tell them you can. I'm more of a blocker. I'm more of a lead blocker.
So you're like the wedge.
You're DeMarco. Huh?
Me and Patrick DeMarco out there blowing people up.
Hey, there you go.
See, my younger days, I had some quicks. Not anymore. I'm not making it to that stretch run. There's no way.
Now get to the corner.
No.
If 1 foot to ground and go, Jay.
The problem is I only have 1 foot right now that works. It's bad when you try to put the bad foot in the ground. I would go to the ground.
But this is interesting, and I know that during the offseason there was some talk about the whole inactive rules. You know, you've got to have seven guys down. Mm-hmm. You're going out there with a 46-man roster, right? Well, the league has said, you know, and last year we saw it with Levine Toilolo having to step in at right tackle because of injuries. There's teams in the league that are like, look, why are we inactivating these players that could otherwise play? So it's certainly something to keep an eye on. Hopefully nothing happens there. But gosh, I mean, who could step in at running back if something should happen?
Well, I think DeMarco's going to have to be
DeMarco.
I mean, because he obviously knows. And then you put all the run patterns, and
maybe
all
a
that.
Tammy at fullback or something like that.
Or you just go single back.
You go single back. Yeah, I mean it causes a lot of creativity.
It does.
Well, let's hope that Devontae and Taryn stay healthy for this week. Now, one guy that's been really healthy, and we'll get to Julio's catch in a minute. But one guy that's been really healthy, so much so that teams are petrified to throw his way, is Desmond Trufant. Here's the other question I got all week. Why did the Falcons keep Desmond Trufant on one side of the field? Well, that's Dan Quinn's system. They don't flip-flop corners. They don't chase. Give the Giants credit. They felt they had a matchup with Odell Beckham being guarded by Robert Alford. Really, he had one huge play and then a bunch of smaller kind of gashes throughout the game. Teams are petrified to throw at Desmond Trufant, and that just kind of shows how much respect he's earned.
And one thing to Alford's credit, on that huge touchdown play, the Falcons were in zone coverage. And Eli just made a good pass.
And somebody missed the tackle.
And somebody missed the tackle. But you can't blame that totally on Alford. He's in the deep third, and he's playing his deep third position. So a lot of people look at that and just directly go to him. But I think the biggest thing is people have to understand – that they're in certain types of schemes. There's a certain type of a game plan they have for this game. And like you said, they don't do the flipping, going back and forth. Yes, they can do, all right, let's just lock up one-on-one with the guy. It can't happen. But for the majority of the game, Coach Quinn said, all right, this is our scheme. This is our plan versus the Giants, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to stick to them. And I wasn't really opposed to leaving Alford there because this gives him more work. This gives him a chance to get better. And the only way he can, gain that confidence to continue to go against guys who are really legit, who play. And obviously, he had some big plays. He made plays. But you also got to look at he had six catches in the first half, one in the second half. So, obviously, there was something you were doing scheme-wise or something you were doing personnel-wise that kept him out of the ball game from making plays on that other half. And we're talking about Trufant. And Trufant, I believe – We've talked to him, his confidence level, the way he carries himself, the way he believes he can be one of the best players in the National Football League is permeated onto the field. And I think teams watch it on tape and they say, all right, this is a guy, we go at him, we got to make sure we're on point because he can take it off, he can pick it, he can do whatever you want. He's playing at a high level. And it is not just people are afraid of him, but I think they understand that he is a unique talent. It was becoming one of the ideal corners in the league.
I think if you look back at it, and I could be completely wrong here, but I think he's only been thrown at once through 2 weeks, and it was a pass defense.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's obviously a reason why quarterbacks are not going his way. You could tell in the first half that they wanted that Beckham Alford matchup because they kept sending him to that side of the field. In the second half, you saw ODB matching up with Trufant.
Right.
And Eli didn't even look his way. Okay, so that's your top receiver. That's your big flight receiver who's not even getting a look sometimes in the second half when you're potentially letting this game slip away. Mm-hmm. So I think it speaks volumes for his talent.
Yeah, he's one of the top five corners in the league right now, and I'm not afraid to say that. I'd argue with that with just about anybody with the way he's able to play man, play zone.
You know, Rich Eisen threw some shade at him. Somebody asked him a question, and he's like, I've never seen Trufant Island on a map. And I'm like,
Oh, boy.
That's all good.
Better look at a 2015 map.
That's right. You're still looking at that Rand McNally from, like, the 80s.
I just hope Bosa keeps taking him in his picks a click so they, you know.
We'll get to that later. Maybe
he wants some.
He's ready to defend it.
I'm gonna let him pick first today. We were talking about that on the bus coming back. He goes, it's your turn to pick first. I said, no, I'll go last. I'm a gentleman. There's women in here, so I gotta prove that I can be nice. Now, a guy that's been really nice, I mean beyond nice, Julio Jones. Jay and I were talking about this on the field. It's the first quarter. It's like the second drive, and he's got six catches.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I have him on my fantasy team, and it's a points per reception league. Mm-hmm. So keep doing it, Matt. Throw it to Julio as much as you want. Then there was a stretch when the Falcons were struggling offensively. I think it was three straight three and outs. And then they get backed up on their goal line after stopping the Giants and getting a chance to come back and win the game. And Julio makes, so far, the catch of the year in the NFL.
Dumb.
I mean, flat out the catch of the year.
Dumb.
Where do you rank this all time? Because this is one of the best catches I've ever seen.
You know what? I would rank it at the top. It has to be at least top five for me. And here's a couple reasons why. Obviously, the catch is beyond ridiculous. And the trust factor that Matt has in him is beyond ridiculous. But I rank it so high because, it's a spectacular catch, but at the time it happened. And if you think about it on the other side, if the Giants find a way to intercept this football,
game's over.
Backed up, exactly, the game is over. And for him to come down and make a play in this type of situation just makes it, you know, beyond crazy. Yeah, we can talk about the catch. The catch is crazy. But in the facet of which it happened, mm-hmm. where in the game it happened, it's easily top five for me.
Yeah, I think it's right up there. And you can go back to some of the catches that we've seen, you know, out of the 90s and even beyond that, when you know, teams really started to pass the ball and you start to see the league become more of a passing league. This is right up there. You know, I've seen our fans and Giants fans argue back and forth on whether this one's better than the Beckham catch from last year, because that was a spectacular catch as well.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I mean, I think they're both great in their own right. This is just something that's, I mean, it's superhuman. He is not a human being. You look at this guy and the way he plays and the effect that it has, you know, to your point about how, you know, he kept getting catches early on, you know, and then – what it does is it opens things up for you later in the game. We mentioned that Tammy reception that went for 40. If you watch, there were three Giants mm-hmm. who looked at Julio, and it allowed Tammy to just come right across the field and be wide open with all that space, because he gained so much respect that they're like, well, there's three of us. One of us could possibly stop him. And you end up going the other way with it.
Let me give Coach Shanahan some credit as well. They put Julio everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He is inside. He's outside. They put him in the bunch. They find ways for him to come in motion where a guy can't get a bump on him, so he gets a free release out of the line of scrimmage. They find great ways to get him free access where he can come out of the gate running full tilt, and it's hard to cover a guy who's coming at you, you know, 20 miles an hour with Julio's running. It's a credit to what they're doing offensively. They're finding creative ways to get him the football and get it to him in space where he can make guys miss, where we know it's hard to tackle him one-on-one.
Right.
So to get him in space with somebody is huge. Here's another play that I ended up breaking down where they ran a bubble screen to Julio. And the guy's trying to play inside. He's trying to play the middle of Julio. He's trying to play the middle of the defense so he can, you know, play against the run and the pass. You can't do that versus Julio. There's no way. You got to find a guy to put out in front of him and say, all right, we're going to put him on him, so you're going to guard him. And the good thing about it was they throw a bubble screen out to him, which is an extension of a run. They throw it 1 yard. Julio picks up 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just small things like that are chunk plays. They pick up big yardage, and just like that, You got a first down and you're moving in chains. Small things like that matter, especially when things are going good. Well, you can just throw it out there and pitch it to him, and he can pick up 10, 12 yards for you.
And, you know, we're speaking of Wes Durham a little earlier. He tweeted out a stat this week that the last time the Falcons played the Cowboys, Julio had one reception for 8 yards.
Won't happen.
Got to think that's
going to
change.
It was that Sunday night game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
1913 Falcons
yeah.
win?
Yeah. It was that one. But I want to ask you guys, I mean, if you're a defensive coordinator and you're looking at this guy on film, the way Shanahan's using him inside, using him outside, how do you even try to attack this guy?
You almost have to zone him off.
You've got to.
You have to zone and you have to keep a safety over the top because, as you see, every time a team, and Philly tried this and Byron Maxwell still trying to get, you know, Julio Jones's footprints off his back or whatever – every time a team comes up and tries to go single high safety and go bump coverage, Matt just looks and goes.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have to say anything. Yeah. You know where you're going, and I'm going to throw it down the field.
But you know what? The Giants did a good job of that early in the game because he had like six catches for like 48 yards or something like that.
They did a really good job of containing
it. It wasn't the big plays. It was the dink and dunk plays. And I think that's how – if I'm a defensive coordinator, I play Julio. I know he's going to get his catches. It's kind of like you're playing LeBron. You know he's going to get his points, something like that. You got to make sure you don't allow that big play because once he gets that big play, it's like, okay, I'm juiced up now.
Right.
You done gave me my energy. I'm going over the top now. You done gave me a big 40, 50-yard play. I got everybody into it. You got no chance then. But you gotta keep him in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you keep a safety over the top, you keep somebody underneath – let him catch his stuff underneath. That's going to happen. He's going to make some spectacular catches here and there. But you can't give up the big play to Julio. You give up the big play to Julio, you have no chance with this offense.
I will say this. I'll rank the catch. I will give Beckham's catch more props than this one. I think I'd rank it higher. What Odell Beckham did last year broke the internet.
Yeah, it was still.
I mean, it flat out broke the internet. Partly it was a Sunday night game against the Dallas Cowboys as well. Julio's play, literally when the ball was thrown, I said, oh, no, that's a pick.
Yeah.
And at first, I thought he was just fighting to stop the ball from being intercepted. And poor Brandon Merriweather, who'll probably get fined this week somewhere because that's kind of what Brandon Merriweather does. Brandon Merriweather's underneath this, and that'll be a poster in somebody's room or it'll be somebody's internet screensaver because he's over the top of him like, get down, little guy.
Yeah.
You're just not big enough to get up here.
And when they slow it down, you see that. He's actually trying to catch it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's kind of pushing him here, but he's got that other arm here kind of cradled like – I'm a cradling against my body, and then he just uses his body coming down. I mean, that's the skill level that you just talked about being, you know, not human that, you know, Julio brings to this game.
Yeah, I was going to say one of our photographers, Mike Benford, got a great shot of Julio, and he's, like, looking back at the ball and just being in that situation where, you know, you've got a defender there and all. It's just – it's amazing.
He's underpaid, man. I don't know what's going on. I mean, I need to pay this guy.
Well, there's some people in this town that would say he was overpaid, but we're not going to mention them. Sorry, Mark. Sorry, Mark Zeno. I know that's our guy, but he, you know, it's neither here nor there. Take a shot. Zeno's all on board now with Julio
being. He better be.
Falcons Cowboys this week. This is one of my bucket list stadiums to see football once. Now, I've been there for a Final Four. Although basically all I did was watch the Videotron because then, you know, Final Four, you're in the center of the field. Sure. I couldn't see anything. I cannot wait to see what the spectacle is going to be in Cowboys Stadium. We talked with Dan Quinn last week, or I did on the radio, and asked him, how tough is it to get guys to turn around after a big Monday night win? Well, you got to imagine now. Human nature kicks in. You're 2-0, and you're playing a Cowboys team that is flat-out beat up. No quarterback, no wide receiver. Jason Witten with, like, everything on his lower extremities is sprained at this point. We don't know what's going to happen with the Cowboys. Shock, as a player, how do you not say, well, we should win this easy with Tony Romo not in the game?
Well, obviously, those are key players in the game. Those are they're franchise guys who you got to worry about. Obviously, and Scandrick also being a guy who, you know, who's out early in the year, but he's one of the key players as well. But as a player, I think you look at it differently. I think you look at it in a facet of those guys get a check just like me. Those guys are here for a reason. Even if they're backups or other guys stepping in, these guys are – legit enough to play in the National Football League. And they're going to play with some pride. They're going to be at home. They're 2-0 as well. With all the issues they got going on, they're still 2-0. They have a lot to play for. They're not just going to lay down and give you this game. And I think that's how players look at it is, all right, they want to take exactly from you what you got. Mm-hmm. And they want to be 3-0. They're going to come out and fight. They're going to come out and play to their potential. And even if those guys who are stepping in, they're going to play just a little bit harder. They're gonna play a little bit better because this is their time to say, this is why I should be the starter. This is why I should be playing. So they're gonna put their best foot forward, and you go out thinking, okay, they're down a couple people, we should just run over them. It's not gonna happen. this is a very good football team still. Sean Lee on the other side is kind of similar to Paul Wohler as a tackling machine.
He NFC flies Defensive around. Player of the Week last week.
They have players on this football team that can make a huge impact on this game. And if you go in thinking we're just going to run with them because they have a few guys out, you got to think twice. And I don't think any player in that Falcons locker room thinks that. They know going in, this is going to be a battle. This is going to be a game. We got to really make sure we're on our details, on our P's and Q's, because if not, we can easily go out there and get embarrassed and say, all right, this is the same Falcons team that went 2-0, but they went out and got drilled by a Cowboys team who was down so many guys. You don't want to be on the other end of that as well. So you put your best foot forward.
For me, I look at the guy who's taken over for Romo, and you look at Brandon Whedon. He's a former starting quarterback. He's kind of been trying to bide his time here. He's got an opportunity. He came in and played spectacularly when Romo went down. I mean, he was 7-for-7. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who knows how to throw the football. You're not taking on Kurt Kittner here, you know, to throw it back to Falcons.
Kurt Kittner reference.
I mean, that's the thing is you're facing a guy who is very capable at the position. So, for me, I think you've got to look at this game as look, we're facing Tony Romo, we're facing Dez Bryant, we're facing a healthy Jason Witten, because you know you're going to have some weapons there that are going to be able to hurt you if you're not on your P's and Q's.
And Jay, one more thing to your point is you talk about Brandon Whedon, a guy who's starting this league. His mind frame now, he won't say it publicly, but in his mind frame now, this is my chance to show people I can still be a star in this league.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm a backup now, but this is a chance to show Jerry Jones. This is a chance to show everybody around the league that, okay, if Tony Romo does come back whenever he does, next year teams are going to look at me differently because of the way I played. So they're going to go out, they're going to prepare, and they're going to make sure that they put their best foot forward. And that's one thing you got to think about, too, for guys who step in, for other guys. They want to show that they do belong.
Well, Jerry Jones gave him the ringing endorsement this week. He's all about Brandon Whedon, and he should be. That's how you're supposed to do it. If you're the general manager and the owner of your team, you're supposed to give your quarterback a ringing endorsement. What scares me in this game more than anything, we talked about our front seven. The front five they have that block might be the best offensive line in the NFL. And I think what's scary for anybody to playing Dallas now is they may simplify their offense and say, you know what, Joseph Randle, Darren McFadden, you know, Lance Dunbar, we are just going to run the ball and we're going to try to mash people. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes Dallas gets a little cute with their offense, and you get that. Romo's really good. Dez Bryant's one of the top five receivers in the league. When they last year decided we're just going to mash you, teams couldn't stop it. We'll see if that happens this week. That's my biggest fear if you look at this matchup.
And it's a great matchup for the Falcons as well. I mentioned earlier the Falcons haven't given up, you know, 100 yards rushing, and you know they're going to try to go out and establish a run game at home. They're going to try to get Brandon Whedon comfortable like we talked about, and they want to try to get him some easy throws. They want to get 7-8 in the box where they can find some one-on-ones on the outside.
Well, because Terrence Williams can run.
That's what I'm saying, and find a way to get him the football. He has been a capable two guy for the last couple of years because of Dez Bryant. But here's his chance again to step in and say, all right, I can be a one receiver. You can put this team on me and I can make plays. So that front five you talk about, they're a year removed from, you know, a guy being the rushing champion. So and this is the same unit. And you know they want to run the football. And with a new quarterback in there, you have to establish the run at one point. So this defensive front, this front seven, they're going to have to bring their lunch pail this week because they're going to get a dose of the run game, and they're going to get a dose of whoever's toting the rock and throwing.
Hey, Vic Beasley, here's another welcome to the NFL moment. Here's Tyron Smith.
Right.
Have fun with that.
Yeah.
Because that guy is a monster at left tackle.
And you know, Vic's faced a couple of pretty good
tackles. Yeah, Jason Peters,
pretty good. Mm-hmm. Eric Flowers.
Ferguson.
I mean,
DeBrickishaw
during the preseason. I mean, this is a guy who's gone up against some of the best in the league so far. And he's, as we mentioned earlier, he's been just a hair away from making that big play. So, you know, another big test for him. I think this will really show us where he's at.
Last thing before we move on to the break with Bosak, Jake Long, name's been thrown around. Fans love to ask, and we got that on our text line at the radio station, 92.9 The Game yesterday. When's Jake Long going to play? I'm like, guys, just be patient. He's been here for like a week and some change.
And I'll tell you why he won't play. He won't be put into this starting lineup is because Ryan Schrader is killing it at right tackle. Number one rated tackle, according to Pro Football Focus.
Fact of the day.
Number one rated tackle among eligible right tackles, okay? So Ryan Schrader is really stepping up into his role. Jake Matthews is having a heck of a year, regardless of the back pain that he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you put Jake Long right now? You don't take out Schrader because he's on fire.
No.
You just don't. You're not going to take out Jake Matthews. Mm-hmm. All right. So right now, I think Falcons fans need to wrap their minds around the idea of Jake Long being a depth player.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. I don't anticipate him being thrown into the starting lineup unless somebody gets injured or unless, you know, there's a collapse somewhere.
And but before we get to break with Bo, one more thing we had on our list to talk about was a fine line between being 2-0 and 0-2. What I believe is an awesome topic to bring up real quick. And just to look at the Falcons' first two games, you look at if Philly makes that field goal, it makes it tough for you. Who knows, if the Falcons go down and score, you could be the 0-1. You go in this game, you're down 20-10
right
in the fourth quarter, and you end up coming back and win. If a couple things don't go your way, you're easily 0-2. So yep. you should be very proud the way this team finished and being 2-0. I remember a couple years ago, the Falcons won, like, they won 7 games by 7 points or less. And then the next year they come back and they lose 7 games by 7 points or less. Those are the small things, the details of a game that matter. Cord Bierman's 3rd-and-1 play.
Right.
You look at the
Week
Giants.
You had Paul Warlow with Paul the 3rd-and-1 play. Yeah.
Big play here. Giants 4th-and-1. Their receiver doesn't get lined up. He's moving.
Yep.
The Giants pick it up. And then they don't end up scoring, you know, 7 points there. They probably could have went and scored. I mean, the small things that matter in a ball game that people don't really realize are the difference between a team winning the game and losing the game.
New Yorkers are ready to tar and feather Preston Parker.
Oh, man, all the Every drops time he had.
He dropped passes. When he caught a pass, they were
cheering. They released him.
Oh, did they?
They released him this week.
Shocking.
Dude, he dropped that 4th-down play. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know it was that close. To him, it was literally in his fingertips right here. And that's the difference between, all right, you got a chance to keep going down that drive. You still had 50-some seconds and a couple timeouts left. And he drops that 4th-down play and you lose the game.
He's also the one that couldn't get lined up. He was kind of moving around. Again, Florida State guys. That's what happened. Second break with Bosek. But Bosek has so much fun down on the field. He's just grinning from ear to ear. He's got his little camera.
You guys got to follow Bosek on IG. Look at him, you know, mic checking.
Here's what I got to tell all these young guys and women that are working with us. You guys don't know what it's like to have a real job at like 22. We have to get up and go work 8 to 5, and you hate what you're doing. You college grads and everything working out for you.
When I was 22, 23, I was covering high school sports in like the most backwoods high schools.
Again, you don't know what it's like to have a real job. When I was 22 and moved here, I worked in a warehouse.
Yeah.
I was selling coupons door to door. So there you go.
I sold retail vitamins.
Can't be involved in that. When I was 22,
were in the NFL.
Yeah, okay. I had a 7-7. So.
Yeah. Stop. Oh, what we got today?
Stop it.
I just want to say we got lucky. We got lucky to get our jobs here.
Oh, yeah.
There you go, Bo.
There you go.
Very privileged to do what
we
do.
There you go, buddy.
Very privileged. So, break with Bosek this week. John, you mentioned Cowboy Stadium's on your bucket list. Curious, Jane, DJ, if it's on yours as well, and if not, which stadium's on your bucket list?
You know what? You talk about having a privilege and being a part of the organization. I'm having a privilege this week to go with the team and go to the Dallas game.
Okay.
And
it's Todd McClure is coming.
Yep. Finneran's coming.
Finneran's coming.
I think Lawyer Malloy, who played 3 years ago, Lawyer's going to be coming. So we're gonna have a good group of guys that come, 5 or 6 alumni guys. But the thing is, I've always wanted to go to this stadium. Ever since I've seen it on TV, everybody's talked about it. It's definitely a stadium on my bucket list that I want to come to. And I'm looking forward to the game this weekend just to be able to go around and see what it's about and see that big old screen. And I think in a couple of years, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is going to be exactly what everybody talks about.
It's a destination.
It's going to be a venue. It's going to be an event to be there.
If you want to eat, make sure you eat in the press box because the food in the concourse is not cheap at Cowboy. For the Final Four, I think I got a cheesesteak and a soda, and it was like $32. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. So if you're a Falcon fan out there, pack some cash.
Well, guess what? That's out of
like
my budget.
We did old school in the movies and like stick food down in your pants.
That's out of my budget, man. You know,
nothing wrong with a pocket hot dog now.
Hey now.
My save isn't set up for that right there.
Yeah. For me, you know, I'm getting to the point in my career where I've been to more stadiums than I haven't, which is kind of a cool thing to think about. But this is one I've never been to. I want to go so bad. I've wanted to go to this place so bad. I've never had any tie to the Cowboys or anything like that, but just to see what is really an engineering marvel at this point.
I used to have one of them good, Falcons. I mean, them Cowboy starter jackets when I was growing up. You know, you ever have one? Never had a starter jacket?
Not a Cowboys.
Not a Cowboys one. I had a Buffalo Bills starter jacket.
I had whatever was given to me.
You know, ultimate slap in the face this past week for me was the honoring of the 1990 Giants Super Bowl winners at halftime of that game. I was so bitter.
He's sitting under the tunnel going, if Scott Norwood wouldn't have missed the kick, you don't have this.
Bill Parcells and Lawrence Taylor
Jay, the
are right
saltiness.
In front of me.
Kidding me?
And I'm yelling about Scott Norwood.
Why you didn't say nothing to LT?
He was smoking
a cigar. He
was having a cigar under.
You was scared of LT?
As you should be.
Yes.
Yeah, LT will rip your arms. You know what's funny? While this is a bucket list stadium for me, the one that was the biggest in the NFL, I was lucky enough to be two games in a row at, was Lambeau Field. I mean, there was – and as much as I complained in the third quarter of the game 2 years ago when it was 9 degrees and my microphone legitimately froze where it didn't work anymore – it's one of the coolest experiences to be out there. There's snow coming down, the elements, all the Packer fans out there shirtless, you know, acting, although most of them should have their shirts on. It's just a really cool place. And then to go back last year for Monday Night Football was even better. I mean, just special. Yeah. When you come through that neighborhood there in Green Bay, Wisconsin, all of a sudden here's that shrine of football.
You know what? I'll second that. I remember my first ever game with the Falcons in preseason was we went to Green Bay and – you get to walk down that long tunnel out of your locker room.
I was just gonna say,
as soon as you walk out of that tunnel, it's just like, you know, and it's an awesome feeling, man, and to know the history of the National Football League and know how many players came from there.
I was just gonna say, like, you come through that tunnel and it's a very long tunnel from the locker room to get to the field, but it's very narrow, and you can just see the light towards the end of it, and it hits you. You think about the number of players who have walked through that tunnel.
Oh man, it's crazy.
And it is just something to behold. That
I remember AJ Hawk hit me in that game and got my teeth were knocked down. I completed the pass.
There's a Shockley 2 somewhere buried at Lambeau Field.
you lost a chicklet in that?
No. I thought I did. I thought I lost it, but I got a good 15 yard out of it.
All
right, cool.
Bosek, and you also had on here favorite stadium all time.
Yeah. You guys have one?
Yeah, there's one tattooed right here.
Here we go.
This is where I was supposed to be buried.
Another plug for you.
The second most historical stadium in all of sports right there.
It's all right. It's decent.
Only behind the Yankee Stadium. Just think about the things that have happened there.
It's decent.
Colts-Jets Super Bowl III. I think John F. Kennedy had a speech there. You've seen some great boxing matches there. The Orange Bowl in 1983, sort of the seismic shift in college football. From option offense to pass. I mean, the Orange Bowl had some great stuff. Wide right one. Actually, it was wide right two and one. Yeah, all that stuff. Not that I'm biased or anything. Bosek sets me up on a platter with this
I do.
Stuff.
Yeah. You know.
No, say the you Carrier Dome. Say the Carrier Dome. We don't care.
That place a warehouse. You mentioned the historical aspect. I'm going for sheer architecture and just coolness. And I think, CenturyLink Field in Seattle is one of the coolest places I've ever been to. Just the way that they are able to funnel the noise right at the 50-yard line. I mean, it's just amazing. But you go into the press box, and the press, they've put a lot of thought into – okay, you know, here's cubby holes so that people don't trip. It's like the little things that make us happy. There's a woman that comes around in the third quarter and asks you if you want a latte, which is great. It's just very nice experience there. I love the look of it. A great location.
Jay loves it because it has good lattes. Come on,
right?
Lattes.
That's all it is.
Great lattes.
Shock, what's your favorite stadium?
Oh,
between the hedges,
man.
Come on, go ahead and say it.
You know what?
You're gonna be a homer.
Athens is always it's gonna be dear, and that's
how about
not
the
even,
swamp?
That's not even worth mentioning. But I'll tell you one place. Swamp never played there. We always played in Jacksonville. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Athens is always number one. That's easy. But the second place I would say because of you say sheer the way it looks. I'm going sheer off just how crazy loud it is. LSU.
Oh,
it's ridiculous in Death Valley. I mean that place. When they say, oh, yeah, the ground shakes, you're like, yeah, sure, whatever. Okay, sure it does. And then you play there, and you're in the huddle, and you're trying to tell guys a play, and they can't hear you.
And they're this close to you.
And then a play happens, and you really feel the ground shaking, and they have a meter that tests if it's, you know, same as an earthquake. That place is ridiculously loud.
I've been to a night game there. I covered Georgia LSU in 2008. And night game in Death Valley,
dumb.
There was
dumb.
Nothing like it. Nothing like I've ever seen. You look at the first 10 rows, and it's just everybody's in overalls, and they're drunk. And it's just, it's like the coolest atmosphere. You pull up, and like miles and miles of tailgating going on. It was just really cool.
Two quick stories. When we first get to the stadium, we're pulling up. You know, you pull up in the bus, and, you know, people are on you. They're pushing our bus and all this kind of stuff. And I knew it was going to be a wild day when this little kid, he's like 6 years old. He's rocking, pushing our bus, and then we look out, and he's giving us the finger. 5, 6 years old, I said, oh, this is going to be a crazy day. Then we get into the stadium, and it's 2 hours before game time. Their entire student section is in the stands rocking. They're rocking like it's kickoff, and it's 2 hours before game. We're just walking the field just trying to see what's – and they're out. I mean, it's a great place to play at, especially if you're a visitor. And for those LSU people, it's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, Giants fans gave us a bunch of those salutes coming and going to the stadium.
We were definitely number one.
We were number one in somebody's book. Which, by the way, there were some people sitting there at like 5:36 when we got out. I said, why are they still in the parking lot? And Jay goes, wait till you see this traffic. And I said, yep, now I see why you're sitting
there. You'd much rather be drinking and eating hot dogs in the parking lot. Than
what do we got for a video of the week this week?
Oh, video of the week? I know Jay loves this one.
This is my
favorite. This blew up on the internet this week.
Pizza.
Pizza. Yeah, the subject, the hint is pizza. So hopefully you viewers have seen
this. I want some
this.
Pizza, by the way.
There he is, Pizza Rat.
No.
Pizza Rat.
He's carrying that big old pizza.
Down the stairs in a New York subway. It's the most New York thing that's ever happened, ever.
Where'd he go? He's got to come back and get it. Oh, no. He's
going to get it. Look at that. Look at the sheer determination of Pizza Rat.
My dude is about that pizza.
It is.
About that pizza, boss.
Piece of pizza is 1.5 times that rat's size. He's pulling it down the – and that rat's got more rushing yards than DeMarco Murray.
Ah, nice one.
Nice.
That's definitely more than 11 yards right there.
So Pizza Rat is one of my favorites. I say sign him.
Sign him.
Bring him in.
He can be the third back for us.
Let him do his thing.
You know, I saw the hashtag on Twitter, Pizza Rat, and I had no idea. You know, I'm not one to click on this stuff. I had no idea. That's awesome.
That's Pizza Rat.
That is pretty cool.
We've all got a little Pizza Rat in us.
Yeah, nice I'm going to tell you Bob. Right now, I want some pizza. I had a banana for breakfast and a pear.
There you go, man. Pizza. That's how the guns get to come out because you're eating right.
Well, the guns get to come out when you go to the weight room. They don't just magically appear.
They naturally happen like that, Bo.
All right, our picks to click from a week ago. Jay Adams, congratulations, picks up the win. He picked Devontae Freeman, 25 rushing yards, a touchdown, which happened to be the game winner.
What was the separator between me and John there?
The touchdown.
Because he had nine tackles. Nine tackles and a pass.
I knew I got by on the skin of my teeth.
You know what also, Matt Moore, former FalconCast member, he told me that he would have gave me a vote because Trufant, they avoided him the whole game. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you know what, Matt, your vote.
Why does that get a vote? I don't understand.
Yeah. Now, if you're a goalie, and Matt's talking about goalies now, then maybe we would have given you a vote. But you had Trufant.
I didn't even give it to myself.
You had Trufant. I had Justin Durant with 9 tackles.
And something happened that never happened.
And Shockley becomes the jinx to Roddy White. 128 straight games, he catches a pass. You pick him, and he goes 0 for 0.
I thought that was it for sure.
That's one of the storylines this week that like I'm having a hard time getting over. I mean, that streak goes back so
beyond
far.
crazy,
so far, and to see that come to an end was really sad.
All right, Bo, I'm gonna let you go first since your guy was avoided. Me and you have yet to come up with a win on Picks to Click, so you get to go first this week.
All right, DJ, I'm not gonna go with Trufant.
Why?
Come on,
you're off the bandwagon already.
People are going to keep avoiding him.
Two weeks.
He doesn't like the system. 2 weeks.
I'm going to get the goose.
Brandon Wheaton don't care about Trufant. He's going to go at him.
You think so?
I think so.
Should I do it?
No. It's up to you because you're going to blame me. Don't blame me.
I'll do it.
Oh!
Peer pressure.
No. Don't do it, Bo. Don't do it.
No, I'm going true.
Go with your first instinct, man.
There it is.
I'm going true.
Oh, man.
All right.
Trufant.
I guess I get to go second because I still got the big
goose. No, you're going to go last, right?
No, he's got to go second.
No, I go second.
We got wins.
Jay gets to go last this week.
The winner goes last.
You know, I've been sticking with the defensive side of the ball, and I'm going to go there again. I'm going to go with the Missouri Hammer. I'm going to take William Moore. I got a feeling he comes up with a strip of some sort and an interception.
Whoa.
Willie Moe always ready. So we'll take Willie Moe this week.
Nice.
Shot. Right, for me, I'm going with Mr. Seminole himself, Devontae Freeman. Ooh. He has to have a big game this week. He is – the guy. He's hungry. He said he wants to rush for a lot of yards throughout this season. So it starts this week in Dallas. Devontae Freeman.
Okay.
Oh.
Don't ever do that to me.
Wow. It happened. October. He don't like that.
Can we get Devontae in here on October, the week of October the 10th?
Yes. Oh,
get him, Bosher, Hankerson, Hester. Get them all in here.
Ooh.
It's Miami FSU week. It's also the week Georgia plays Alabama. So maybe we'll just get all the guys associated with that game in here.
Who's Syracuse playing? Maine that week? All right.
Georgetown, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. I love what I saw out of Jacob Tammy. The attention that's being paid to Julio Jones. Julio's going to get his, but okay. I feel like Jacob's going to come up with a couple of big plays. I like that teams are ignoring him. Keep doing that.
Okay.
Let's hope
Tololo has all the catches.
All right, so all Jacob right. Tammy, no, Devontae playing. Freeman.
Desmond I like Tammy. I like that. That's a good pick.
All I care about is a W at the end.
I thought about Tammy. That's a good pick.
I need one. I can't be over. Guys, a lot of fun. We're 2-0. Hope you're
all over.
Can't wait to see Dallas.
2-0,
can't wait
baby.
To see Cowboys Stadium. 2-0. About that time.
Hit it. Oh, too much heat. Too much heat. Boom!
Oh!
Boom!
Oh! Just hit outside.